In just a moment, I want to invite you to read with me this passage, but before I do, I want to prepare you a little bit for reading this. I talked some last week about the book of Jeremiah. One way to think about those 52 chapters that constitute the book of Jeremiah, it's a big book, is that you can divide it basically in half. Chapters 1 through 25 is destruction. God's saying, I'm going to destroy some things. I'm going to tear some things down. And I think it picks up on chapter 1, verse 10, in the call of Jeremiah, where God says, I'm going to use you to do some deconstruction. He uses four different verbs to talk about in chapter 1, verse 10. Four different verbs of ways he's going to tear things up, destroy. But then he uses a couple of other verbs, build and plant, in chapter 1, verse 10. But he says, that's not the end of the story. I am destroying, I am deconstructing so that I can rebuild. And one way to think about the book as a whole is chapters 1 through 25 are destruction. And chapters 26 through 52 are reconstruction. The deconstruction that he's talking about is the destruction of, in particular, Jerusalem and the temple and exile. And that reconstruction begins in exile and will continue as they return from the exile. This deconstruction is talked about in the book of Ezekiel, and a lot of what Ezekiel is about is the idea: is God? Can we still live in the presence of God if the temple gets destroyed and we get sent to Babylon? And I think that's what this picture in the book of Ezekiel is about, where you've got this fabulous vision early on of this wheel within a wheel. I think if you look at that imagery very closely, it's imagery of the temple. And it's the idea that God's presence is mobile. It's not simply confined to Jerusalem. And then some of the other Old Testament books that talk about this reconstruction are the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. And the last three of the minor prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, that they're all talking about this reconstruction that God's going to do. But in this destruction, it begins in Judah in the south in 597. That's a date you may want to write down somewhere, 597. Jeremiah's ministry begins in about 597. And what we're going to read in just a moment is the in-between time of the beginning, the first wave of exile, 597, that it finds its culmination in 586. About 10, 11 years later. And so what's happening is there are some people in Jerusalem saying, yeah, this first group of people has been taken into exile, but it's not going to last very long. Because we've got the temple. The temple is not destroyed until 586. And so when you read the book of Jeremiah, one of the things you'll hear is in chapter 28, right before this, there's this other prophet, competing prophet, who's a very popular prophet because he's got a popular message. And in Jerusalem, after this first group gets taken to Babylon, this man named Hananiah, in chapter 28 of Jeremiah, this man named Hananiah, who's a prophet, competing prophet, he has a message that says, yeah, those guys got taken to Babylon, but in a couple of years they're going to be back. And everything's going to be great. And the message of God to Hananiah through Jeremiah is that was a mistake to claim God said that when he didn't. And in fact, God has a plan for you. Do you hear people sometimes talk about the idea, well, God has a plan for me? God has a plan. Well, in Jeremiah 28, God has a plan for Hananiah. It's to kill him. And by the end of chapter 28, Hananiah is dead. And the message that, the counter message that Jeremiah has is, more destruction is on the way. Because God's going to rebuild you and He has to destroy you first. He has to do some deconstruction. This prophet writes, chapter 29, that we're going to read in just a moment, a section of it together. Jeremiah 29 is a letter that Jeremiah, who is in Jerusalem, is writing to that first wave of exiles in Babylon. Chapter 29, 10 through 14, is part of that letter. Now, I want to stress something before we read this together. And that is that we will be reading from the Texas Revised Version. And the reason I say that is, it is very easy to read this section and personalize it and individualize it. The word "you" throughout what we're going to read is "y'all." It is not you as an individual. One of the most abused verses in the Bible is Jeremiah 29, verse 11. The Lord says, "I have a plan for you." It's not you as an individual. It's y'all. And not only that, if you read the context, and we're going to read the context, verse 10. The context is that y'all are going to die in exile in Babylon. You are never going home. That's my plan for y'all. The return from exile is 70 years from now. You won't be alive. The people Jeremiah is writing this letter to will not be alive whenever God's plan for them comes to fruition. Now, I'm not saying God never has plans for individuals. You read the call of Jeremiah, it's very clear God has a plan for Jeremiah. Chapter 1. 4 through 10. God had a plan for Hananiah in the previous chapter. You may not like that kind of plan. God is a planner, but He doesn't necessarily plan just you and your individual life to do what you're hoping He will do. God has a very different plan for them. And we'll hear that in this reading. So let me invite you to read with me from the Texas Standard Version. I'm not sure if y'all's is really a word. I know y'all is, but I don't know if y'all's is, but it's in here. Let's read this together. "For thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will visit y'all, and I will fulfill to y'all my promise and bring y'all back to this place. For I know the plans I have for y'all, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for evil, to give y'all a future and a hope. Then y'all will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear y'all. Y'all will seek me and find me when y'all seek me with all y'all's hearts. I will be found by y'all, declares the Lord." I think there's some very important things said in this chapter. They're important for me. They're important for you in this church. One of the things I come away from this passage with, and I've spent a lot of time really in the last 8 or 10 years thinking about this chapter. Some of you a few years ago spent about 6 weeks with me thinking about this chapter. One of the things that I think is very important in this chapter is that it is a call to the people of God to embrace who you are. To embrace who you are. Not to be constantly worried and anxious about who you're not. Because sometimes we get it in our minds that if we're going to survive as a congregation, we have to look this certain way. And specifically for this congregation, one of the things that it's easy to get in, it has been in my mind, and I've had to work through this, and this chapter has helped me do that, is I have, from the very beginning of my ministry, when I came here, one of the things I was hearing is a lot of our younger folks have left. Before I ever came, they were telling me that. And we're not so sure we're going to survive. And so my assumption when I came in then was, well, we've got to figure out a way to be sure that we have younger people here. What this chapter helps me realize is we need to embrace, we need to accept, we need to welcome who we are right now and not be constantly wishing we were somebody else. We need to thank God for who we are. And who we are is that we are mostly an older congregation. We are mostly gray and gone. Aren't we? That's my saying. I've been saying that for years. It's better gray than gone. At least it's there. We are a mostly gray and gone congregation. And that's okay. We need to embrace that. Because grays and gones, if they are willing to do it, can serve God. Being gray and gone is not the time that you coast on into glory. It may very well be the time when you do your greatest service to the Lord. When you're gray and gone. Now, I know there are some who I've talked to some people about this idea before. Other ministers in particular, and they say, well, but gray and gone people die. That's right. But what I counter to them is, yeah, but I've noticed God keeps making more gray and gone people. He does, doesn't He? Is God going to quit making gray and gone? In the same way that maybe younger families leave and go somewhere else, I wonder if grays and gones might come here. Whether that happens or not, the grays and gones that are here, could that be our what we're known for? A vibrant ministry, a call to older grays and gones to serve God and serve God well. A second thing I notice in this passage, and let me point you about to something that this idea of embracing where you're at. It's verses 5 and 6. Listen to verses 5 and 6. He's saying this to people who are the first wave of exiles in Babylon. And he's going to say to them, you're never going to go home. You're never going to go back to Jerusalem. It's never going to be like it was before. And so he says, embrace the place you're at. Isn't that the point in verses 5 and 6? In fact, let me back up to verse 4. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses. Live in them. Plant gardens. And eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there and do not decrease. Do you hear what he's saying? Embrace the place you're at. Don't be wishing for Jerusalem. It's never going to be that way. Embrace who you are. You are exiles. You are in Babylon. You are Jewish people in Babylon, and that's not going to change. So embrace who you are. Don't rent, buy. Isn't that what he's saying? You rent because you don't think you're going to stay long. You buy because you're buying in. That's what he's saying to these people. Embrace who you are. It's a message that's counter to what Hananiah was saying in the previous chapter. This is going to last 2 years, so you might as well rent while you're in Babylon. No. Build houses. Plant your gardens. Start looking forward to having your grandkids that are born in Babylon. Embrace where you're at. A second thing that he stresses in this chapter is that God can use you to be a blessing if you'll embrace where you're at. That's chapter 29, verse 7, isn't it? You may want to write this if you've never written this down in this passage before, but somewhere right there's a Hebrew word, S-H-A-L-O-M. You don't have to learn a whole lot of language, but that's one word you ought to learn. Because it has a lot of implications, not only in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament. That's why in every New Testament letter that has a salutation, it will say grace. It doesn't just say grace. That's how all Greek-speaking people wrote their letters, grace to you. New Testament Christian letters added a word, grace and peace to you. That's what shalom means, peace. And it doesn't just mean an absence of conflict. That can be part of it. But it's also the idea of wholeness, well-being, that things are as they ought to be. And so in chapter 29 and verse 7, he tells these people that he has already told, buy, don't rent. Embrace where you're at. And he says not only that, look outward. Don't simply look inward. Look outward. And as you look outward and seek the peace of the place where you live, in fact, you will find your own peace. It anticipates the very thing Jesus teaches later when he says, if you want to find yourself, lose yourself. Listen to what he says in verse 7. But seek the shalom. Seek the welfare, the peace, the well-being of the city where I have sent you into exile. You're not here on a whim. You're not here in the circumstance where you're at. Exile didn't happen just by accident. I have sent you there. And what I want you to do is I want you to seek the well-being of the people around you, the Babylonians. That's an odd idea, isn't it? Kind of like love your enemies. We are called to seek the peace of our city. The well-being of our city. To look beyond ourselves. as we patiently wait for God to finish His deconstruction and do His reconstruction. In fact, as we seek the peace of others, I think that is in fact a part of His reconstruction. I tell people sometimes when I talk about you to others, this congregation has a great history of service to God. But it is my conviction that some of the best service this congregation has ever done is being done right now. By gray and gone people. It is by God's hand that we are gray and gone today. God sent us here. I believe that with all my heart. And finally, if you look at chapter 29, verses 12 and 13. God does not play hide and seek, but we do sometimes. We don't want to spend much time with Him. I think that's what led to exile for Israel. I don't know how many of you are doing the readings, this chronological reading, but it so happens that we're working in Jeremiah right now. One of the things that has occurred to me as I've been reading the last week or so in the book of Jeremiah is how many times he says, you've been paying a lot of attention to other gods and not much attention to me. When I have called you to give exclusive attention to me. And when he says in chapter 29, verses 12 and 13, you'll seek me and you'll find me, I think it's because he's always been available. It's just they hadn't been looking. And that it is only by sending them into exile that they finally decide to look and to really pray. To pray as if they believe He's really there and it makes a difference. Listen to what He says in chapter 29, verses 12 through 13. Remember, this comes right after the verse 11. I have a plan for y'all. Of course, it's going to come 70 years from now. Verse 12. See, I'm going to reconstruct you. So that after 70 years of reconstruction. See, that'll make this look easy, won't it? What we've been trying to get this done in the last several months. 70 years. This is easy. Verses 12 and 13, then you will call upon me and come to pray to me. And the implication is, as you have not done in the past. And I will hear you. And you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. What's God want from us? He doesn't want young. You can't go back and buy that. He doesn't necessarily even want a full head of hair. He wants people that will seek Him. That's what will tell the tale. Will make the difference. Are we going to be a congregation not of younger people, not of older people? Are we going to be a congregation that seeks God? That keeps asking over and over again, God, what do you want us to do? Who do you want us to be? How do you want us to reach out and bring peace and shalom into our world? How do you want us to do that? Help us. May God help us to want to seek Him.